Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The long arm of American professional sports fever is reaching deeper and deeper into American youth. In American basketball, you could say the leading edge of mania for fame, fortune, and ever-younger talent leads to one boy, Alonzo Trier, 13, ranked number one for his young age in the nation. He's a prodigy and incredibly devoted to the game, but is this a good thing? This hour, On Point in the season of March Madness, the story of Alonzo Trier, 13. You can join the conversation, how young is too young to be locked in on dreams of the NBA, or is it never too early for hoop dreams? We will hear in this hour from big-time Division I basketball coach Phil Martelli at St. Joseph's University, and we'll check in with Sports Illustrated writer Tim Layden about how the Sweet 16 has shaped up in this year's NCAA tournament. But joining us first from Washington is Michael Sokoloff, contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine and a big voice on the sociology and culture of sports. He's author of Warrior Girls, Protecting Our Daughters Against the Injury Epidemic in Sports. His remarkable cover story for the New York Times Magazine Sunday was headlined, Alonzo Trier is in the Game. Mike Sokoloff, thanks for being here.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Hey, that was an incredible story. I mean, Alonzo's story is incredible. You presented it really wonderfully, beautifully written piece. But I just wonder, first off, what kind of response you're getting to this. Here's this beautiful kid, just 5'5", just 13. He was already very prominent. Now you've boosted that another few miles up into the sky. What kind of feedback are you getting, Mike?
Well, I think that people were taken by the story, taken by his dedication, you know, taken by a sweetness that reads out of his quotes and also out of his picture. I mean, he really is a good kid, but I think that adults who read it also see a certain vulnerability, and they wonder, you know, is this a good idea? And a lot of people have asked me, you know, is he really that good? What do you think will happen with him? Is he going to make his goals? And, of course, that's the most difficult thing for any of us to answer.
We want you to sit back and really introduce us to Alonzo, but give us the context first, Mike. What is going on with this deep reach down into very, very young kids' ranks to find the next star? What's going on with that? Why?
Well, there are a couple of things going on. Not surprisingly, one of them has to do with money. There is money to be made in discovering young talent, money to be made by people who put on these camps and these tournaments that feature young talent. There's money to be made by people who want to associate with these kids and maybe stay in the entourage when they and if they strike NBA gold. And then there's something else that goes on in sports. There are people who just really like to be the first one on to somebody and say, well, I saw LeBron James when he was only 14 years old, or I knew about Kobe. You know, that's a little bit part of being a sports fan for some people. So since we knew about LeBron James in ninth grade and his games were already on TV as high school games, you know, everything starts getting younger. And Alonzo is very much the object of this fascination with young talent. And if you've discovered the best 14-year-old player, then somebody wants to see, well, who's the best 12-year-old player, the first 11-year-old player. And, of course, it has to be somebody really good and somebody who looks like they might be somebody down the line who you can say, I knew him when. And Alonzo presents that way.
Yeah, and now it's Alonzo Trier, sixth grade. Alonzo was actually supposed to be with us today, had agreed to, but once your story came out, I think the heat and the limelight, even for a kid and a family who have sought it, became a little intense. They sort of floated away since that came out, Mike. But paint a picture for us. Alonzo Trier, the boy, his little family unit there, his life and incredible practice regimen, lay it out for us.
He lives in Federal Way, Washington, which is just outside of Seattle, which, interestingly enough, Seattle is a hotbed for young basketball talent. Mm-hmm. But Alonzo is beyond most of the rest. Alonzo lives with his mom, who's a social worker. They live in a nice two-bedroom apartment that just happens to have a gym at its entranceway in the community building. Alonzo comes home every day from school, as well as on weekends, 7 days a week. Doesn't take 450 shots, but makes 450 shots.
Can't stop until he does. His mom is out there in her sweats and flip-flops, rebounding and counting for him, 450 balls through the hoop. And not just through the hoop, but it has to be sort of more or less only net before he counts it, if I got you right.
That is exactly right, because his mom told him at one point, you know, your fate should be, you should control your fate. So Alonzo has translated that as, I'm not going to roll it on the rim. I'm going to swish every shot I take. I'm not going to leave it to luck. So he does this incredible workout, you know, which is really, in addition to taking good shooting, you know, is a physical workout 7 days a week. And that's just the beginning. I was with him one day when he went from this workout to a private basketball tutoring session with a coach, and then to his AAU team in Seattle. So between the time that he spent playing and practicing and the time that he spent on the road, it was 7 hours of basketball on that one day, which is not unusual for him. So, you know, his life is basketball. To a large extent, his mother's life is basketball, and they are locked into this together, both believing that this is his future. And they are doing everything they can do to make it work out for them.
Pull the camera back a little bit for people not in this world. I think the sixth graders jetting around the country to play basketball over the place is not really a familiar scene. What is that bigger national world that he's very much part of?
Well, there's something called grassroots basketball. That is non-scholastic basketball, meaning not high school basketball. And this has become the more important basketball, where players are scouted, where they get college scholarships, where they may go off to the NBA. Although the NBA now makes you wait a year or so. So one player has recently gone from grassroots basketball into pro basketball in Italy. There are tournaments. There are, you know, lodestars, megastars like Alonzo. And the idea is to have someone like Alonzo at your tournament, to have the best players at your tournament, to add luster to your tournament so the promoters can make money. So Alonzo is flown around the country for free. He is, you know, and this can go on a couple of times a month. Last summer, he took four cross-country trips back east to play in tournaments. So he lives a life of free travel, free Nike gear, free Under Armour gear. He has his own line of clothing that comes from a Seattle designer and startup manufacturer, with the hope being that, hey, if Alonzo's wearing it, other people will see it and my company will take off. So he has his own dreams. And then there are lots of these other people around him who have dreams for him that are attached to their own financial aspirations.
What kind of kid is he, Mike? What's his attitude, outlook? I mean, with all this attention, and he's, as you point out, 13.
He's a nice kid. He's a really nice kid. He's a very sweet kid. He's a child who sort of has an evident sort of vulnerability and softness to him, despite his toughness on the court. What I remember when I met him at the Junior Phenom camp in San Diego for the first time last summer, and I shook his hand, and what I remember is he held on to my hand for what seemed like a very long time as we began to talk. And the only moment at which he broke off that handshake is another parent or a parent tapped him on the shoulder and said, "Will you take a picture with my son?" And this parent's son was about the same age as Alonzo. And Alonzo stepped away, took the picture, and this man said to Alonzo, "Thanks, brother. You're a role model."
A role model at 13, and in some ways, why not? I mean, there's a shock value in a way in seeing his picture. He looks so young, and right on the cover of the magazine, the Times Magazine, "He's 13" is the big headline. But is that really, I mean, is it really shocking if he was a girl gymnast or a boy or girl violinist or pianist or Tiger Woods in his day? They were, many of them, hard at it at 13, 12, 11.
Well, that's a great question, because we do know that prodigies across various fields do exist. And certainly in music and the sports that you mentioned, you know, gymnastics or ice skating, you know, those are not necessarily fully women's sports. Those are sports that younger girls with less developed frames tend to excel at. Here we have a basketball player, And if you pick out a basketball player at the age of 13, and he's already 6'2", and he looks sure to grow to 6'6 or 6'8, and he has Alonzo's kind of skills, you're probably going to be right, because there are a limited number of people in the world who are 6'6", 6'7", 6'8". If they can shoot the ball, if they're athletic, if they have this genius and artistry for the game, you've got the right kid. Yes, he's a prodigy, or at least he's a great college player and probably a pro. The really difficult thing with Alonzo is he looks like maybe he's going to be 6'2", or maybe he's going to be 5'10". We don't really know. If he's only going to be between 5'10 and 6'2", you know, there's a lot less or a lot more risk involved in making a bet on somebody like Alonzo, and more risk involved for Alonzo, frankly, in thinking that this is going to be his future.
And so he's being, what, he's devoting himself to something that is, in a way, a huge gamble. Of course, any effort at that kind of greatness or, you know, sort of class-apart status involves that, but maybe even more here.
Well, I think so. And the other question is, there's a point of diminishing returns that most sports parents don't recognize. You know, you mentioned Tiger Woods, the regimen that he went through with his father, the talent that Tiger had for attention to his sport and for focus was a singular talent that is not replicable by many people. Alonzo seems to have this, but it's a long road between now and where his ultimate goals are.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. There's a down-to-the-wire finish in the game in Oregon on Saturday between powerhouse Gonzaga and a feisty, much lower-ranked Western Kentucky team. Final score, 83-81, Gonzaga in the thick of March Madness. We're looking at the next generation of basketball stars and how astonishingly young they're being anointed. Front and center among them, 13-year-old Alonzo Trier, written up this weekend by great sports writer Michael Sokoloff. He's author of Warrior Girls and a big piece in the New York Times Magazine. He's 13. There's Alonzo, 5'5", 110 pounds, 13 years old, and the whole grassroots basketball world with their eyes on him. Michael Sokoloff joins us from Washington, and it's just a great story. You can link to it from our website. Joining us as well right now from Louisville, Kentucky, is Clark Francis, editor and publisher of Hoop Scoop Online, which ranks top young talent nationally. Clark Francis, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Hi, Tom.
Hi. You're the guy who says Alonzo Trier is number one in his age group in the country. Why?
Well, basically, his skill level is far superior to most players that are 4 or 5 years older than he is. He's been to five-star basketball camp. In a lot of the major national camps, you know, he's a great competitor, and he really works his tail off. And he has, I wouldn't say Allen Iverson-like speed and quickness, but not that far off. Brandon Jennings is another guy that comes to mind. So you combine those things, and as you guys were mentioning earlier, the one thing he misses is the size. So a lot's going to depend on how much he grows. But again, you know, he has a lot of the things you look for. If you're, you know, the three things that most great players have, at least one of these three things, are size, athleticism, and outside shooting. If you have the work ethic, you have the passion, the understanding of the game, the skills, you know, suddenly they don't make people like that, as was alluded to earlier. If you're 6'10", can shoot the lights out, you're a freak athlete, and you're the hardest working guy anybody's ever been around, you're Kevin Durant. You're one of your upside, your potential's one of the best players in the history of the game. Whether he'll attain that, whether Alonzo Trier will attain that, time will tell.
But what does it mean to be ranked number one when you're 13? Does it mean the world? Are you in? You're the next, you know, one day out there, LeBron or Allen Iverson? Or is it ephemeral? Does it mean, in a way, nothing because you're still just 13?
Yeah, it means you're the best sixth grader or best seventh grader or the best player in the country in your age group. It's all relative. Everything changes. It's a starting point. It's like watching a horse race. Everybody watches the start of the race, but in most cases, it really doesn't mean anything in terms of who's going to win the race. So, again, from a standpoint of perspective, if a guy turns out to be great, yeah, the more perspective along you track the guy, the more interesting think it is. So from that standpoint, it's good. But anybody who thinks wants to anoint somebody as the next great this or the great that, when they're in 6th, 7th, 8th grade, even sophomore, junior, senior in high school, so many things can happen. But again, I'd rather have guys, you know, players, you know, girls, if you're talking about girls' sports, I'd rather have them playing sports as a great extracurricular activity than on the street or doing something else.
Michael Sokolov, you watched, of course, Alonzo play. Did you see in his play what would make somebody like Clark Francis say, there he is, number one in the country?
Well, I try not to put myself in the position of being a scout or an expert. That's certainly more Clark's field, and Clark sees a lot more players than I do. Yes, I saw his genius. I saw his size. I did wonder about his quickness. I think that for a normal-sized player, which it looks like Alonzo is going to be, I would imagine, and Clark would know more than I do, I would imagine that at his age you should always be the fastest kid on the court. And then once you get to the NBA, maybe you'll find somebody or a couple of guys just as fast. I didn't necessarily think that Alonzo was usually or always the fastest guy out there. There were others that seemed as fast. But, you know, that's very technical. That's scouting. It's something that I try not to do. But I do feel it's something to keep in mind. Certainly, he's hugely talented. And his focus, his kind of focus, is a talent. You know, Tiger Woods, Michael Phelps, the ability to practice your game and to do the parts of the game that aren't interesting, foul shooting, you know, to practice the little things, that's a gift. And Alonzo does have that gift. It may be his greatest gift.
We had Adam Yauch on not long ago, Beastie Boys guy who put together a film called Gunnin' for that number one spot, a little bit older basketball players. Brendan Jennings was among those that they interviewed there. How would you compare? Here's two players, Clark Francis. Brendan Jennings, here's Alonzo Trier. How do you compare it to? Give us a sense of how you go at it.
Again, I think there are a lot of similarities. I mean, they're both guards. You know, Brandon had the good fortune to grow to 6'2". But again, I mean, that's who Alonzo patterns his game after. I think Alonzo actually shoots it better. You know, Brandon was streaky, but they both had that flair for making the spectacular pass and great court of vision, and they both just, you know, compete. And they are, you know, I don't think he's as fast as Brandon, but you know, the more I watch Alonzo Trier, the more I think he does have a lot of the speed and quickness that he may not be the fastest guy on the court, but he's always one of the fastest, and he sure does compete. And I saw him the last time I saw him was in Texas in a camp in January. Try not to go to too many middle school camps, but I've been to this one the last 3 years, and good, you know, really good talent. And he had 22 points in the game, and running clock, and end of the game, I think it was. I think he hit a couple of threes and scored like 8 points and brought his team back from like 6-7 down. They won the game. And I mean, it was just, you know, really phenomenal, you know, what he did, you know, at crunch time could take over that game.
Clark Francis, editor and publisher of Hoop Scoop Online, who ranks young talent nationally, puts Alonzo Trier at number one. Thanks very much for joining us, Clark.
Thank you very much.
Let's get a call from Newport News, Virginia, and Alfonso. Hi, Alfonso. You're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom Howell. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
In general, this my question is this. I mean, I know it seems this kid has a great talent, but my question is, do you really think a 13-year-old boy who's not yet a man should have the weight at this level on his shoulders at his age?
That's the question. I mean, what about Tiger Woods had weight on his shoulders at that age? He turns out to have had a pretty great run. You look at Alonzo and see something different, Alfonso?
Well, no, I don't really see. I just think that it's more prevalent that it seems that the adults are pushing him towards something that he really, at this point, I don't think he even understands it yet. I mean, you made mention of he was at a basketball camp, and a man brought his child over and asked him, could he take a picture with him? And he says, oh, after he did take the picture with his son by the same age, the adult said, oh, son, you're such a great role model. I think that a 13-year-old should be thinking about 13-year-old things, even though he's a great talent, or he has great talent, and maybe even greater potential. But I think that it's a lot of pressure on a 13-year-old at this age to be placed in a position or on a pedestal where he has to perform or in his mind. If he fails, then he's not going to be successful.
Yeah, there's the risk. If he doesn't make the NBA, the big time, the big show, is he a failure? But Michael Sokolov, how about it? Does Alonzo himself, you've talked with him a lot, does he see it as pressure or just the life?
Well, he doesn't see it as pressure now, and I think those are great points that were raised. All the adults around Alonzo, including Clark, and the people who run these camps, they say, well, you know, as Clark just said, this is just the start of the race. This doesn't assure you anything. I don't think the kids really hear that, because the same people who are saying that are the ones who are elevating them. So the question is it too much pressure on him? Yes, I think it is too much pressure on him, and I think there can be a pretty big fall. The one thing I'll point out, not just from this story, but from my other stories about young athletes, the stereotype is that it's the parents pushing kids. Mm-hmm. What I often find is the kids are doing just as much pushing. They see this world. They head into this world. They see the benefits. Of course, it's fun to go play at a basketball camp, you know, every couple of weeks to fly around. The kids are doing just as much pushing. I think it's often the parents' role to put the brakes on when it's unhealthy. And there is a point of unhealthiness. You know, people can judge for themselves reading this story whether Alonzo has reached that point or gone beyond that point of health.
Mm. Let's take a call from Cape Coral, Florida, and Blaine. Hi, Blaine, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Pretty well. What do you think, Blaine? What do you know?
Well, I have a different situation, similar but different.
Uh-huh.
My son is going to be 13 this year,
okay.
And he plays ice hockey at a travel level in Florida.
Okay.
Now, my objective is to get him into, possibly get him into prep schools and on to college, keeping his grades up and being able to play the game, which he loves. But how far do I take it? Because, down here in Florida, ice hockey is very expensive compared to the northern states.
Costs more to cool that rink, for one thing.
Exactly.
Right.
The electricity bill is extraordinary to keep the rink cold, but... It would cost me thousands of dollars a month to travel him all over the United States to actually have him play against heavy competition.
So there's how much is it worth in dollar terms, and then maybe, you know, how much is it worth in human terms? Blaine, maybe to help us look at that, let me bring into our conversation from Philadelphia, Phil Martelli, head coach at St. Joseph's University men's basketball team. Been coaching for 14 years at St. Joe's. In 2004 was NCAA Coach of the Year, has taken five teams to NCAA tournaments, a big figure in American college basketball. Coach Martelli, thanks very much for being with us.
Tom, thank you for your time.
We've been talking about Alonzo Trier, 13-year-old basketball player. And right in that theme, here's a parent you must know and hear from lots of them with a 13-year-old athlete of his own. And he's wondering, you know, how much to pour into this effort. It happens to be ice hockey, but could just as well be basketball. You know, how much pressure, how much travel, how much flashy camps and fancy teams and all the rest is it wise for a kid to have, for a parent to lay on, Coach?
Well, Tom... If I could answer, I don't know. That's the answer. I'm just blown away by Mike's article.
Yeah.
What happens if everybody remembers and can go back in time? We started to talk about this phenomenon. Seems to me maybe 15 or 20 years ago, we talked about the Little League dad, who had every answer. But that was just on the local level, and it exploded. It became travel teams, neighborhood to neighborhood. It became like this young kid in Seattle. It became national. To be honest with you, your caller from Newport News, he's right on the mark. When is a 13-year-old allowed to be a 13-year-old? And I guess this... The dad in Florida, we want more and we want better for our children, whether it be better piano lessons, better ice hockey opportunities. And it is a really, really fine line. I think as long as we can honestly assess the kids' love for an activity, then I think we do whatever we can for our children so that they have a little bit better.
But Phil Martelli, isn't it coaches like you, maybe not you, but like you, college coaches, who are the ones who are reaching down and sort of exciting all this almost fanaticism?
I think that what happened was I will acknowledge that coaches, I think, made big mistakes. And I'm not afraid to call it on the carpet. When you start offering scholarships to 7th and 8th graders, you painted all of us with a brush that I don't think is healthy. And to have kids selecting colleges before they've selected a high school, I think the public has a right to raise their eyebrows and point a finger. I do think that the NCAA and the NABC made a step forward. It bothers me, to be honest with you, to tell you that we have a rule where a 7th grader is now considered a recruitable student athlete.
Mm.
But I also think that there's some things that go on college campuses. I think the schools that extended it, it became obviously a public forum and discussion. I think that those presidents had the right to call their coaches in and say, not at my school, not on my watch.
Mm.
And that didn't happen. There had to be a rule passed. There had to be it just is so exploitive. This kid is 13 years old, and they're talking about a line of clothing. Stop.
He's got it. Yeah. There's a line, Michael Sokoloff, that you use, and I wonder what the coach had to say about this. You were at one of these very elite basketball camps. Alonzo was there, and many others, kind of flash camps, tournaments. Watching how the kids play and playing in a very kind of self-centered way because they need to shoot, they need to make an impression quick on guys like Clark Francis and maybe
right.
scouts who are there. Yeah, and Michael writes, to watch this up close was to gain an understanding of the roots of the decline of team play in American basketball,
agree.
Phil.
Wholeheartedly agree. Is Mike on the line?
Yes, he is.
Mike, in your story, and correct me if I'm wrong, I've read your story twice, Clark Francis, his closing statement was he described this young fellow playing in a game. It's the first time that winning the game was discussed. I don't read anywhere in your article where anybody ever talks about his team's win. They won a national championship in summer basketball. They talk about flying him around to play in tournaments, but no one ever talks about they win the tournament. The decline of our game is twofold. One, no one practices anymore. Now, this young kid seems like he practices.
Yeah.
But no one practices anymore. They play all the time. They play in this tournament in this location. Next weekend, they're in another tournament in another location. You don't get better playing this game. You get better practicing this game. And the second thing that has happened is, and I've read where Mike wrote this, where we now have to, almost debrief them when they get to us, in that they've gone so long, they minimize the high school basketball experience, which should be the greatest experience that they have, and they minimize winning. We have to teach them about winning in basketball. And you want to go further and further out. What Mike Krzyzewski and his staff did with our last Olympic team is winning became the number one objective.
That's opposed to showing off your personal flash.
Exactly right.
A March Madness moment there from the second half of the Villanova-UCLA game played in Philadelphia on Saturday. Villanova beat UCLA 89-69. We're talking this hour about basketball boy wonder Alonzo Trier and what it means to be making superstars of basketball prodigies, grooming them for the NBA when they're 13 years old. Michael Sokoloff is with us, wrote a great story for the New York Times Magazine over the weekend, all about Alonzo Trier. He's 13 is the big cover headline. He joins us from Washington. We're joined from Philadelphia by Phil Martelli, Coach Phil Martelli, head coach at St. Joseph's University men's basketball team and kind of a legend in his own right. Mike Sokoloff, Coach Martelli, was pointing to the reprogramming that has to go on now when some of these young prodigies actually get to college-level basketball. You saw why that is required. Give us a sense of that, Mike.
Well, first of all, I happen to be a Philadelphian originally and have seen lots of Coach Martelli's teams play at St. Joseph's, and he coaches beautiful team basketball. So I can well imagine why he's frustrated at the pool of players he gets from this environment that I wrote about that is not prepared when they get there to play team basketball, because the whole youth basketball momentum is toward playing for yourself, being noticed, and of course you do that by shooting the ball and by not playing a lot of defense necessarily. You know, I watched Alonzo play, and part of it was with an eye toward it as a basketball fan, because I admire basketball, and I think those of us who love basketball feel that it's a game that really does reveal and teach character, because it's the one game in which you have to give up a little bit of your own skills and your own glory in order to benefit your teammates and your team. And that's specifically what is lost in this milieu. And it's a very difficult thing to teach at 18, 19 years old. And I think that one of the reasons why we see these teams in the NCAA tournament, they play fierce, terrific defense, because that's a function of effort. It's a function of wanting to be on the court, because that's what your coach insists on. To play a beautiful team game is more of a function of basketball literacy, and that's something that occurs over the course of years. And I think Phil would know much better than I do, but I would suspect it's much more difficult to sort of teach in a crash course.
Coach, I want to hear you on that. Let's get Frank in here from Hampton, Virginia. Frank, you're on the air with Phil Martelli and Michael Sokolow.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
First, I want to say thank you to Coach Martelli. I appreciate his candor, and I understand his frustrations being a coach myself and being a high school coach and a college coach and a club coach for soccer. I only have one concern, but I understand where he's coming from. It's about winning. The problem I have here with this whole perspective with these young kids is it's the anti-team. You know, the whole point of playing on a team is a sense of community, a sense of spirit, a sense of being a part of something and knowing your role. And, of course, it's the big deal is it's about the joy of playing. You know, the rewards you get are things that are much greater than what you say about shoe contracts or playing in the NBA. And that seems to be the philosophical and fundamental difference with where these things are coming from. So my question is, what is the end game? What is the motivation for taking a young kid and placing him as the best in the country? First of all, who really can say, with all the intangibles that have been talked about? And third, why aren't we pushing this kid to be a kid and having the joy of being part of a community and just playing the game for playing the game? Where is this kid going to be able to take his best friends on plane rides to Boo Williams camps and tournaments and things like that?
Does he have time for friends? Right. Coach Martelli, what do you say to Frank?
Frank's right on. The joy of being on a team lasts a lifetime, and accomplishments on a team last a lifetime. I think, well, the reason for doing it, and Mike was around these around people, and I'm not saying that they're bad people because of it. Everybody's looking for the next Kobe. Everybody's looking for the next LeBron, and they want to be able to say that they got in early. Hopefully, it's not for only financial gain for all of these people, but they all want to be in, and they want to be noticed for being in. I would go even a step further in Frank's thinking in saying this. Why are there junior phenom camps? Why are we flying kids to Texas? What happened to being the very best with your friends and in your area? And now I would suggest that a cottage industry has broken out. Someone figured out early on that this was a way to be financially beneficial to them, and they run these things, and you call it junior phenom, and I call it next generation, and somebody else calls it something else.
And they're making money.
But in a way, let's go back to the fact that some of this is parenting decisions. that need to be made.
Yeah, but if I may, let me ask you, you said it should be about winning. They forget that. I guess by that you mean it's all about showing off personal skills to get the attention of somebody.
It's all about rankings.
Rankings, exactly. But
they go for the idea of they know that they're ranked 11th. Now, the kid may not know, but the parent knows.
Oh, yeah.
I'm 11th, and the ninth player is there, and if I beat him head-to-head, then I should be ninth, and he should be 11th. And it means something. What does it mean? I don't know.
But what about another kind of winning here? Mike Sokolov said earlier that Alonzo and his mom live in a nice two-bedroom apartment, but it is a Section 8 subsidized apartment. She is a single mom. A lot of these kids, I mean, they may come from middle-class families, but a lot do not. Kids like Alonzo, you know, may see this as their one shot, their one way to make it in this economy.
Well, I can't imagine that a 13-year-old is that intuitive, but if he is, God bless him. This is a trained behavior, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know this young guy. I just read the article.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say to you that I know the Philadelphia basketball scene, and this is not about making a better life. This is not about this is hard to deal with, to have the spotlight so bright on you at such a young age. And
Mike, is Alonzo looking to put his mom in a, you know, big fancy house? Is that part of what's on his mind or something else?
I think that he won't. That's not something you'll hear verbalized. But sure, he's 13. He's not 6. He's not 7. He watches ESPN Sports Center. He watches the NBA All-Star Game. And how can't it be part of the equation? Money is a huge part of this equation. He knows that people are giving him money or giving him benefits for a reason. So sure, I think that that's out there. And I think that, you know, you mentioned Tiger Woods and Michael Phelps,
I mentioned Michael Phelps,
these gymnasts. We know about them because they made it. This is usually a fantasy. I don't know that it's a fantasy for Alonzo, but even the hope for a college scholarship is quite often a fantasy. There are fewer full college scholarships than people imagine. And by the way, if you're playing a sport like ice hockey, as the son of that one caller is, you can spend more along the way than the college scholarship is worth ultimately.
Coach, I know we have to let you go in just a second here. What's your last word for a 13-year-old kid like Alonzo? He's out there shooting, you read it, 450 swish hoops a day, dreaming, hoping, yearning, working hard, maybe too hard. I don't know. What do you say to him?
Hopefully he will continue to play for love of the game and not love of the ranking and the spotlight. It is a great game. It's an absolutely great game, and there are a lot of terrific people. But play because you love it.
Coach Phil Martelli of St. Joseph's University joining us from Philadelphia. Thanks so much for being here, Coach.
Thank you. And, Mike, thanks for putting this story out and getting it in the public's mind.
Yeah, amen to
thanks,
that.
Coach.
All right.
Let's get a call from John in Beverly, Massachusetts. John, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Tom, I listen every day. Love the show.
Thanks. What are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking a couple of comments and then a question. I've seen it all with sports, and as a parent of five kids and with a couple of them pretty damn good athletes, you know, walking that line is very difficult. It is a, you know, it's a balance between husband and wife, and then how much discipline you employ and how much kid activity you allow and all of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult. It's very difficult. And I've seen sports at a young age at a high level. My two boys went to a private school in New Hampshire where they play high-level hockey. And that buffer is key to the parents. And I'm not advocating every kid be able to go to a private school, but what I'm saying is if the coach and the coaching is the buffer zone and it's appropriate, then it's great.
You mean get them on a team and get them out there, let them do it with the team instead of this sort of you and me against
the
world deal?
That's right. It's got to be kept in perspective, and it's a fine line, no question about that. But I've seen it go, the pendulum swing far too far to the one way and you know, not enough in the other way, and it applies to every sport. But it's no wonder a kid in today's world in basketball, as a high-level basketball player, it's no wonder that he's, you know, got this applied science in his own head about money and, you know, what he sees around him, what he sees in the world. So
you have a question for Mike, John?
Yeah, I do. I wanted to ask him. I'm sorry I got off on that tangent.
No.
I wanted to ask him about if he has any kind of way of comparing this kid's talent with a Spud Webb or a Bugsy Moog at their, you know, when they were a young age, because you've already talked about Allen Iverson, but Spud Webb was just incredible to me. I mean, at 5'6", and then Bugsy Moog even more so at 5'3".
Comparing over the years there, Michael Sokolov, how about it? Is it possible?
Well, those guys were really small, and Alonzo's just about as big as, you know, those are two of the smallest guys ever in the NBA. So I think Alonzo's going to be a little taller. I don't think he's necessarily going to be quicker. The short answer, I don't have a way of comparing. Those guys were in the NBA. They made the NBA. This kid's got a long way to go. You know, I will mention something about what the caller said a little bit earlier about, you know, a parent having difficulty finding the right balance. I think that's true, and I have a lot of sympathy for that. I have a daughter who was a serious swimmer and is now a college swimmer. And when she was 9 or 10 years old, she started doing these two-a-days where we were taking her to the pool at 4:45 a.m. as a 10-year-old to swim. So, you know, I am not unfamiliar with this world, and that may very well have been, you know, over the line on our part. I don't know. Certainly, probably some people thought it was. So these are, in fact, really difficult decisions and really difficult judgments, and people do, you know, find them for themselves. I think the difficult thing about a young man like Alonzo is certain people set the sort of upper limit, and the higher it gets, the more people are apt to say, well, what I'm doing is perfectly sane because look at this.
Right out there. Mike Sokolov, you've opened up this world for us in a really insightful way, and I'm so grateful to you for being with us this hour and for the big story. Mike, thank you very much for joining us. It's just been great.
Thanks for having me, Tom. I really enjoyed it.
We're now through two rounds of the NCAA's Men's College Basketball Tournament. The Sweet 16 battles open Thursday, with everyone fighting to make the Final Four showdown in Detroit. So far, lots of heavyweights advancing, but Purdue snuck past higher-ranked Washington on Saturday to make it to the dance.
Tap back in by Pondexter. That's it. The Purdue Boilermakers are going to the Sweet 16 for the first time since 2000.
That's what everybody wants to hear. Tim Layden is senior writer at Sports Illustrated, was covering the tournament games in Philadelphia this past week. He joins us now from Simsbury, Connecticut. Tim, thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom.
So how's it shaping up? They're down to 16. What does this year look like?
Well, it looks like a lot of what people in the gambling business call chalk. 14 of the top 16 seeds have made it through to the 16, which is the most in history. So I guess what we've seen here is all the criticism on the first weekend that not enough Cinderella-type teams were chosen for the field has been proven invalid.
Cinderella is what people sort of live for, the excitement of that out-of-nowhere team, but does this mean better basketball at the end of the day or not?
Well, I think so, and I think really what people like to see, I think you could make the argument that what they like to see when they get to the end of this tournament is to see the heavyweights alive, but to see them have been tested by Cinderella along the way, and I think we have seen that. We've seen Little Siena, the smallest team in the field, nearly beat Louisville in the round of 32 last Sunday. And we saw Cleveland State beat Wake Forest in the first round and severely test Arizona in the second round. So I think we've been teased by Cinderella, and I think that really is almost enough to keep the fans happy.
President Obama and everybody else filling out their brackets lately, how's it look? Is the president right on? You know,
the president's bracket is not doing well. It's interesting. One of the bracket competitions I've seen actually lists his bracket as one of the competitors, even though he obviously didn't pay his X number of dollars and join that pool. But I think obviously filling out the brackets is what has really made the NCAA tournament accessible to the wide public. I know people who participate who have no interest in basketball whatsoever, much like they fill out their little boxes for a Super Bowl pool every year.
So if the casino guys would call this chalk, what does it look like? Who are the odds-on favorites as it gets
down?
I think
actually what you have a chance for, I think, in my opinion, is a chance for the first time in history for four teams from the same conference to make it to the Final Four, and that would be the Big East. I think Pittsburgh or Villanova from the East, I think Syracuse from the Big East has a very good chance to defeat North Carolina. I think Connecticut will survive in the West, and the aforementioned Louisville will get out of the Midwest, and I think you'll see an unprecedented four teams from the Big East Conference in the Final Four.
North Carolina?
In my opinion, North Carolina will lose to Syracuse, but I think it will be a very good game and certainly could go either way.
Well, we will be watching along with all the rest of the country. And, Tim Layden, you're very good to join us for a couple of minutes and give us your beat on it. Thanks a lot for joining us, Tim.
Thank you, Tom.
Tim Layden, senior writer for Sports Illustrated, looking ahead to the March Madness all the way to the Final Four in Detroit. And, of course, all that gets underway again on Thursday this week. On Point is produced by Julie Jupp, Sam Gale Rosen, Ping Wong, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Hillary McQuilkin, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and John Wibby. With help from Kathy Corman and Sam Sanders, our senior producer is Wen Stevenson. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And starting today, follow us on Twitter, On Point Radio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.